There is a drought in the land. When Elijah is sent to Zarephath, Zarephath was on the outskirts of the region, and it was given to the worship of Baal, which is to say, this was less of a church-going crowd and more of a brunch-going crowd, but a lot of hollandaise sauce there in Zarephath. But as we will see, even in Zarephath, where you'd expect God's explicit absence, God is nevertheless present to work wonders and provide for those who serve the Lord. Now, it's hard at first, though, if you read the text slowly, to get past the fact that Elijah has just had the gall to beg from a beggar. At least in those times, if a woman's husband died and the government did not take care of her, she was reduced to poverty in short order. And with all of his priestly and pastoral experience, we might expect that Elijah would know a broken-hearted widow when he saw one, especially one who was gathering sticks for fuel for her last meal. But what does Elijah do? He says, how about a cup of water? And then, as this humble woman turns to fetch him a cup, Elijah adds an additional request. And when you get a chance, a slice of bread, thanks. Trouble is, the woman had no bread. All she had was a half cup of meal, a tablespoon of oil, and those sticks she was gathering for fuel for her and her young son's last meal. She said, I'm going home now to eat this with my son, and then I'm going to lie down and die. Oh, but don't be afraid, Elijah said. You go and do as you said, but make cakes for the three of us, for the Lord has said the meal won't be running out, and neither will the oil. And you know what that poor woman did? And by God's power, the meal did not run out, and neither did the oil. There was enough food for the whole household for many days, the text says. Now, a few things strike me about this widow. The first is that she, in her grief and in her pain, can only see her immediate situation. It's like she's looking through a rolled-up piece of paper with one eye, and she just sees where she scans. She has no reason to look up, only down at the ground to find twigs for a small fire and a meager meal. The second is that she is afraid. She's afraid for her young child and of the hunger pangs that she knows are to come. But third, she is nevertheless faithful. Faithful. And together with Elijah's faith, they have enough to conduct a smaller single household version of the feeding of the 5,000. The meal just won't run out, neither will the oil. It just keeps flowing. And for many days, they all had plenty to eat. Abundance. Abundance somehow came out of what was assumed to be scarcity. That is the central message I offer from this text today. Where every indication of reality points to scarcity, God is at work opening and transforming our imaginations to see an altogether different reality of abundance. This theological concern, though, has been on my mind as of late, and I mean to be very clear with you with the reasons why, because it is important for all of us to know the recent developments in our own church regarding scarcity and abundance. I have been, and I confess, tempted to think only in terms of scarcity because, quite frankly, we are not receiving the income or the pledges that we need to correspond to the dreams that we have for 2019. And there is a significant enough gap that I have decided it warrants the attention of a Sunday sermon. Now, our projections have shown the need to reduce our expectations. by around 10%. And I am grateful to those of you who in the last week or two have been working to reconfigure a budget that we can pass. Today, though, I want to tell you why I believe this has come to pass. First, yes, we have had some bad luck with a few significant givers moving away due to no other reason than their life circumstances. We've also laid to rest a number of very generous people across the year. And this is a normal part of every church year. But I believe we may see these kinds of losses trend upward over the years. It's possible, simply because it's more common habit for older generations to tithe their income to the church. Another dynamic I see going on is that churches are experiencing, along with everyone else, significant cultural changes in our time. People are just anxious about the future. Many Americans struggle to make ends meet. I'm often reminded of the story, another lectionary text for today, of the widow's mite. When Jesus is with his disciples and he spies a widow coming and giving all she has to live on and placing it into the temple treasury, into the coffers. And he says, see, these others give out of their abundance, but she gave all she had to live on. Now, sometimes we hold up that widow as an example of giving during these times of year. But I have come to see her more as a victim of great and powerful institutions these days, often having to do with major corporations, healthcare, the cost of housing going up. All of these kinds of dynamics are playing on us, and especially on younger generations, and it's making it hard to get by. Churches suffer, nonprofits suffer, and we're all sort of in this boat together. However, I am reminded that those who built this church and the sanctuary we now sit was funded by people who were living through the Great Depression. People took out second mortgages and bonds because they had a greater dream for what was to come. In fact, I should say, they dreamed about us. We are the dreams come true for people of our past. But we are in a crisis. Our communities, and especially these young people and young families, aren't really designed to bear the burdens we place on them. Many start their careers in debt peonage, and the pie just gets sliced into smaller and smaller pieces. Yes, these are dynamics that are present. But third, and most significantly, our particular church has seen a relatively small number of people with means withholding pledges due to anxiety about our vision. And I believe specifically to the formation of a discernment team focusing on questions about LGBTQ inclusion. And there are rumors and parking lot conversations, all fine, it's all to be expected. It's part of doing church. But there seems to be some mistaken information circulating that I need to address. And that is, one, that the discernment team was handpicked to ensure a certain outcome. It couldn't be further from the truth. When Mary Cunningham and I sought recommendations from staff for who would be on this team, we did not ask anybody what they thought about LGBTQ people. We did have criteria, though. We wanted to make sure we didn't overwhelm anybody who was already serving on committees, but we also wanted to make sure that we asked people who we knew were respected by their peers and representative of certain demographics in the church, and we also wanted people who weren't quarrelsome by nature. Not that there are any of those folks here, but just to be sure. And we made our phone calls, and we never asked people on the phone, what do you think about this or that? We just said, here's the task, will you serve? Here's what we believe our church is being called to do, will you come along and help us? And people said yes. That's how the committee was formed. I don't know what people on the committee think, and I'm not going to be there as pastor most of the time to direct anything. The first thing I did was bless them and pray for them in person, and then I left and they had their meeting. I'll come back when they ask me. I'm not sure when they'll start the congregational work, but I imagine it will be early in the new year, but we have to give them time to work together. We have to give them time to get to know each other and their stories, to learn about each other, and to learn about the dynamics of our own congregational life. We have to be patient and pray for them. There's no reason to be afraid. Here's what they're going to help us do. They are going to lead us in one of the most biblical practices that you can find in the New Testament that is specific and lined out. Here are the instructions that Paul gives the Corinthians. What should be done then, my friends? When you come together, each one has a hymn, a lesson, a revelation, a tongue, or an interpretation. Let all things be done for building up. If anyone speaks in a tongue, let there be only one or two, at most three in each in turn, and let one interpret. If there is no one to interpret, let them be silent and speak to themselves and to God. Let two or three prophets speak, and let the others weigh what is said. If a revelation is made to someone else sitting nearby, let the first be silent. For you can all prophesy, one by one, so that all may learn and all be encouraged. And the spirits of prophets are subject to the prophets, for God is a God not of disorder, but of peace. So I want you to hear that, and I want to be clear that when our conversations begin, everyone is invited to come along and be a prophet. And that way we will weigh what one another says, and we will seek what seems good to us in the Holy Spirit. So fear not what people think or people say, and don't be afraid of what the Holy Spirit might do among us. There is no reason to be afraid. So yes, we may admit that there are visions of scarcity attempting to conscript the narrative of our common life. But that can only happen when we forget how powerfully God is already at work with us. Just this fall, when we placed a call on the congregation to support a specific church, the First Baptist Church of New Bern, in the wake of Hurricane Florence, guess what happened? You know, I and other staff, we thought maybe we would collect $3,000 or $4,000, maybe $5,000, $22,000 we collected in a short order. So I know God is at work among us. I know the Spirit moves, and I know you are generous. Think about the day of Habitat for Humanity, where we overwhelmed the site and built a new house, and so many from across our congregation were there. Not just with their finances, but with their bodies to give back to our community. We have a team in Puerto Rico for the second time this year, putting roofs on houses in the wake of Hurricane Maria. We have sent a team to Haiti, and we have people prepared to go back to Haiti to build a medical clinic in the middle of nowhere, it would seem, if you looked on Google Maps. So I can't get there from here, but we do. We get there and we build, we provide hope for people because I know this congregation is generous and the Spirit flows through us. Some of you may remember me putting out a call for restocking the clothes closet earlier this fall. Folks come to lunch at the Crossroads on Thursdays. They really need clothes. They depend on that closet. And we give out good stuff. And it just got, well, picked over. Well, I made the call and all of you responded. And within 24 hours, the place was overrun with new clothes. I know that God is working among us and that even in spite of imaginations that might be given to scarcity, God is at work among us, giving rise to abundance even in places we didn't imagine. And quickly, I want you to think about the fact too that people are excited about our church not just in our community, but outside, not just in our congregation, but outside in our community. People have started to stop me at meetings and on sidewalks and saying, "Hey, thank you for what your church is doing. I'm pulling for you." Over the past couple of years, we've had over 100, I don't know the exact figure, but over 100 people have joined this church with enthusiasm, and they've jumped in headfirst to our life together. Our young adult Sunday school classes are beginning to swell. The most consistent attenders among us tend to be young people and young families with children because of the free babysitting, but other things too. So I want to say to you, those of you who may be afraid for whatever reason, anxious about culture, political mood, LGBTQ discussions, don't be afraid, because I don't want you to miss all the fun. I don't want you to miss all the fun. In fact, I want all of you to think about who has been dreaming of the kind of church that they think doesn't exist, because I know it exists here. I know there are people throughout this city who don't know the quality, the energy, the prophetic capacity of this place, but they would be here if they knew about it. We just have to tell them. We just have to make sure that they know. And I believe people will come. They will join up with us. They will build us up, and they will help us dream new dreams. I know it's so. Think about just how powerful the abundance of God's grace is among us any given week. Think about all the ways, the multifaceted ways that our congregation acts in this community and beyond. When I think about the parable of the sheep and the goats, the one that inspires the quote, "The least of these, inasmuch as you do the least of these, you do unto me." Well, what's happening in that parable? They're feeding the hungry. They're giving water to the thirsty. They're welcoming strangers. They're taking care of the sick. They're visiting those in prison. We do all of those things. And Jesus Christ promises us that inasmuch as we do these things, we meet him face to face. Folks, we meet Jesus Christ face to face every week, so why wouldn't we invite others to come along and meet him with us? It doesn't matter who you are. Come and see. It doesn't matter where you're from. Come and see. It doesn't matter if you're afraid or if you're full of courage. Come and see what God is doing in this place and in this time. You too will be transformed by the renewing of your minds, and you too will be conscripted into a great adventure of God's drama of salvation in world history. Think about that. I want you to know that I'm not afraid. I am not afraid. And I would have good reason to be. Think about my family. Wouldn't we be in one of the most vulnerable positions here? But look at my hand. Don't pause this on the replay and slow it down. But look at my hand. It's steady. I don't go to sleep at night worrying about the congregation's vitality in the future. I stay awake at night with excitement. Because I remember that in the day of my call, I was struck by a lightning bolt. And every time I think about the capacity of this church's power, I feel an electric current running through me. When I wake up in the middle of night, it's not about our budget, it's about our future and the excitement that I have. And folks, I'm waking up in the middle of the night quite often lately because I'm very excited, because I see what's coming, and I want you to come along and catch this vision with me. Look at the future and see what's possible. A new kind of church that attacks with boldness the challenges of our time, with confidence that God is with us and that God will provide. And that even when all the evidence is to the contrary and it bespeaks scarcity, we know that God's Spirit is abundant and pouring out on top of us. I want to tell you another thing about the staff. Now, I don't go peering at numbers, So I asked Wally, our church administrator, for some information. I said, Wally, I don't need you to tell me numbers. I just want you to tell me if this I can say as a fact, that you could bear me up on this. I said, I'm just wondering that if it ever comes a point I need to say this to the congregation, then I could say it and it would be true. Is it true that the staff of this church does not only give in kind, but gives of their own finances? Is it true that the staff is invested so fully in the future of this church and cares so much about its people that they are in fact tithing one of themselves back to the church by their giving? That is, take up what all the staff give together, add that up, would that pay for one of our positions? And he said, yes. So the staff is fully invested. We are here with you, we love you, and we are walking alongside you to weather this storm together. And I want you to come along with us. So though our plans have fallen a little short, it doesn't have to stay that way. We have big dreams for 2019, and we're going to begin doing things that I don't know of any other church doing. Things that strengthen the ties that bind us together. Practices that we share together that draw us close to each other. Ways of cultivating and sustaining friendships, holy friendships, across time and space. Ways of becoming more steeped in the Word of God such that it shapes us in new and profound ways and makes us resistant to the lies of our time. All of these things are in store for us. Plus, I might add, Advent and Christmas, which is awesome here, is right around the corner. Another reason I wake up in the middle of the night with excitement. So I know that when we look down at pieces of paper passing around our committees these days, it's easy to think that a hand is pressing down, that the weight of our circumstances is pressing down on us and it's a burden too much to bear, but that's not true, because what I see is that we are upheld. That the Lord upholds not only the orphan and the widow and those who have been outcast, but the Lord upholds dreamers, and that's us. It's not up to us after all anyway. I'm not excited about what we are doing necessarily. I'm excited about what God is doing in our midst. God is with us. God will carry us. God will keep us always and forever.